With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This week we're chatting to Sarita Domingo about her brand new audiobook. It's If I Don't Have You. It's available on Audible right now. We chat about why it's quite a tightly formatted book, but how even with that, even across just three acts, it left her room to go with the flow and learn about the characters as she went. You can hear how the idea came from quite a bizarre dream, and what she did when she woke up, before she actually sat down to write it, what happened in that gap. And we talk about writing romance and why she doesn't really care for the normal tricks and tropes of the genre.
I think I'm more interested in just the idea of falling in love. So while there is a structure, I don't think it's kind of... I'm less interested in tropes, although they do obviously inevitably sneak in. And I don't, obviously there's absolutely nothing wrong with tropes, but it's just a slightly different approach for me. But I do love romance. And I do love the idea of experiencing two characters falling in love, both in terms of reading it and writing it.
Stick around. There is more on the way with Sarita Domingo this week in Writer's Routine. Yes, welcome along to Writer's Routine, the show where we take a look inside an author's working day. This episode is sponsored by the new book from Caroline Lawrence. I think it will really help you out, because if you're interested in the craft of storytelling, and I'll be honest, I can only gather that you must be, that's why you're here. Well, this book has been made pretty much for you. It's called How to Write a Great Story. And Caroline knows about that. She's written 35 books, sold over a million of them. Her Roman mystery series has been on the BBC. She gives talks all over the place on the technique of writing, writing for kids, writing for adults as well. And this book is a real joy, a real immersive joy on how to bring words to life. It takes you through the whole process, from the who, the what, the where, and the why, right to the very end. And it's filled with ways that you can bring the words out if you're struggling a little bit. There are little tips scattered all the way through, like torturing your hero, understanding the theme better, why you need to work on the three-act structure as well. It helps you understand the storyboard. There's things in there about talismans, about the stakes of your book. There's ideas about what you can do if your work is stagnating, why snacks can always help with writing, why it's important to put your phone away to help the story take shape in your head. It is fantastically done. Listen, I've spoken to over 130 authors on the show now on this very subject. And sometimes trying to pull out great tips and bits of advice on storytelling can be quite hard, because it's quite difficult to structure and verbalize these abstract ideas, but Caroline does a brilliant job of putting them down onto paper and really helping you out with it. If you're interested in writing fantastically, you need to find out more about this book. It is the ultimate companion, and it's one of those ones that you can read all the way through, and you can also pick up and find out what you need, when you need it, just to remind you of some stuff you already know. It's beautifully illustrated too, and there's a brilliant bit in there as well about how Pixar tell stories in a way that almost can't be beaten, but you can learn how they do it. It's in the new book by Caroline Lawrence. It's called How to Write a Great Story. Look it up. Support the writing community that we've got going on here. It's a brilliant book. I will pop a link so that you can get a copy in the episode notes and over at writersroutine.com. Now, this week on Writer's Routine, hello, by the way, my name's Dan Simpson. Thank you so much for listening. As we're coming to the end of the month, I hope you've done well with NaNoWriMo, if that's what you've been doing for the last few weeks or so. I hope your word count is on track. I hope at all, if possible, that this show has helped you out with that. And this episode should push you towards the end. We're chatting to Sarita Domingo this week. She is the author of 5 novels, a short story collection, some erotic short stories too. Her new one is a novel and an audiobook from Audible. It's called If I Don't Have You. It's all about an unexpected romance between Ren and Kayla, who are thrown together in the world of showbiz. We talk about how she had the idea after a bizarre dream about Eminem, the real Slim Shady, and then what she did with it after the dream. She also works as an editor for Mills and Boon, so we chat about what her work there has taught her about how first drafts should look. You can hear how she stops herself procrastinating, why sexy music helps her write as well, and how she balances working full-time and working on her passion for writing all in a day. It's a brilliant chat, this one. I think you'll really enjoy it. Very quick warning before we crack on with it, and I can't really believe it's taken me this long. It's taken 9 months of online recording through various lockdowns, but it's finally happened. I've recorded using the wrong microphone, so I sound a little bit dodgy. But Sarita sounds brilliant, and she's what you're here for. So bear with, I think you'll really enjoy this. We start, as always, with what Sarita sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
Well, I'm lucky enough to have a room of my own, as it were. Our spare room is sort of like my office, and that's where I sit down and write. And I've got a desk in there that looks out of the window. So I can see sort of buildings and things in my immediate view. But then I've got a really nice view of Crystal Palace, and I can see the tower, the sort of Crystal Palace Eiffel Tower thing in the distance. And then around me on my desk, I've got a picture of Toni Morrison, who's my hero, that I printed out, and it's a picture of her writing desk. And I've put a little speech bubble on it that says, time to write, just for motivation. And I've got things like, I've got a couple of lanyards of like events that I've done where it says Sarita Domingo, author. Also to motivate me and remind me that that's what I'm supposed to be. And then there'll be on my desk kind of a few writing books, maybe. I really like a book called The Writer's Book of Days, which has sort of writing prompts for each day of the year. And things like On Writing, I think it's called, by Sol Stein. And An Emotional Thesaurus, so I don't get repetitive about sort of the emotions descriptions that I use. And there's always a big pile of CDs, because I'm still one of those people that uses CDs and a stereo, mainly so I don't get distracted sort of trying to search things on Spotify or whatever. But yeah, I tend to listen to quite a lot of music when I write. So there's usually a selection of CDs on the desk as well.
What type of music does it have to be while you're writing? Do they have lyrics in it or not? Is it particularly pertinent to the type of thing that you're writing?
Yeah, definitely. I try to sort of, often at least, I'll try and set the mood of what I'm writing with music. So if it's something quite sexy, occasionally it will be music with lyrics. So I do quite like listening to like FKA Twigs or James Blake, quite moody, sexy music, or most often it will be jazz, so wordless, like Miles Davis, and particularly to kind of get going, specific albums like Bitches Brew by Miles Davis, really, because it's quite experimental and pacey and weird. It just kind of, it really helps get me in the zone for writing.
And with the books that you were talking about there, how are they helping you? I'm always curious, because you know, I do a podcast trying to help people to write. When you are writing and maybe you're finding moments a bit hard, the words are struggling to come out, what is it about reading books, reading prompts that helps it kind of unblock a little bit?
I mainly use them for, particularly if I've done sort of a full draft of a book and then I want to sort of reassess it, I'll look at books about writing and kind of think, am I achieving the things that they're sort of describing in these books? Am I hitting those markers, or are there sort of ideas in there that I could try and incorporate into my writing? So they're kind of just there as a reference, particularly when I'm redrafting. And with things like the emotional thesaurus, that was something I only came across recently, but it's very useful for if I feel like I'm repeating the same sort of ideas for emotions again and again. So yeah, just for reference really.
Talk me around the walls of the room that you're writing. Do we have art on there? Do we have plot points, little memory aids for you so you know what you are actually getting done that day?
I actually do put sort of post-it notes on the window, on the sides of the window when I'm writing. I'll put sort of the key themes or ideas that I want to keep in mind when I'm writing to sort of remind me and make sure I'm not straying from the ideas that I have or supposed to be focusing on in the writing that I'm doing. But around me, there are lots of books. There's bookshelves completely stuffed with books, and sort of some of them are books that I've written, so those are face out, just to kind of remind me that, hey, I've actually had some books published. There's a mirrored wardrobe right next to my desk, so I can kind of disconcertingly see myself sitting at the desk writing. And I do, it's probably a bit too much information, but sometimes I do turn to my reflection and sort of sound things out or look at myself, or yeah, it's very weird. And there's a sofa in there as well. So quite often my cat is curled up on that if she's not trying to jump on my keyboard. And there is a bit of art. There's kind of just a few bits and pieces. There's a framed photo of Keanu Reeves in Point Break because he's one of my favorites. There's a crossword that my husband completed, so he was very pleased with himself. And yeah, just other bits and pieces. But yeah, that's about it really. I work full time, so I'm an editor by day. So I edit books for Mills and Boon. So I tend to get up really early, like 5:30-ish on a typical day, to try and get some writing done before I go to work. So I'd get up, do everything that I would need to do, you know, shower, get dressed and everything. So I'd be sitting at my desk maybe by about 6:45. And at that point, I mean, I'm a bit of a procrastinator, so I do use a couple of apps to try and avoid just surfing the internet or deciding I suddenly need something from, you know, internet shopping or something. So usually you can program, there's something called Cold Turkey that I use on my laptop that it sort of kicks in at a particular time, and it only, you can select which websites you want to be able to access. So if I need to research something, it will still allow me to do that, but it blocks others that I find tempting. And I also use an app called Forest on my phone. Sounds like I've got a real problem. But yeah, so those two things I sort of engage. And then I probably start writing. I do tend to go back over what I've written the day before. So I'll look over that a bit, maybe do a few tweaks, and then write for maybe an hour and a half before I head to work. Then I'll be at work all day, and in the evening come home, maybe eat something, watch a bit of TV for an hour or so, and then do maybe an hour and a half of writing in the evening as well.
Is that the perfect day? Are you sticking to that quite tight regimen? Every single day of the week, you're always up at 5:30, you're getting it done, you're coming home, then you're doing more work?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I do, you know, I wouldn't call it ideal in the sense that, well, I do love editing books. I do also love writing. So, and I'm not that fond of getting up at 5:30. So, but certainly on the weekends, I do write as well. So it's maybe a bit more leisurely on the weekend. I might sort of get writing after lunchtime and write till, I don't know, 6 o'clock or something, depending on what I'm doing that day. But yeah, I think I'm quite disciplined with it. Otherwise, I just wouldn't get a novel written, really, because working full time is, you know, quite time consuming as well.
Those are two quite different hours of the day, your writing sessions. How are they different for you? Do you find you're much better at working in the morning than the evening? Maybe it's the other way around. Is it a real chore in the morning? Is it quite a slog to keep yourself going late at night?
I don't know. I don't. I do quite like the sort of feeling of being solitary in the morning. It's quite inspirational. Often I can, you know, watch the sunrise and things like that, which is inspiring and beautiful. But I don't know if I'm any more productive in the morning or the evening. I think they're different. So in the evening, I quite like one of my favorite writers, Jandy Nelson. I saw a talk where she spoke about writing in the dark. So in the evening, I do quite like to leave all the lights off and just write with just the light of my laptop or maybe a lamp or a candle. And so that gives a different feel as well.
Can you try and describe that feel? I know that might be a bit too abstract, but what is it about writing in the dark that is quite, that I guess, romantic?
Yeah, it's very, it feels, it's sort of like sensory deprivation. And particularly if I'm listening to music as well, it has a different, it sort of sets a different type of tone than the morning, which, I mean, you know, it kind of depends on what I'm writing as well, but the sort of glow from your laptop, it feels more isolated and maybe easier to access my thoughts when I'm writing in the dark. So I suppose in a way, it's not that dissimilar to the early morning feeling when I'm the only one up and I'm sort of alone with my thoughts in that way as well.
If you've only got these two separate moments of the day to write, if we were to drill down into those, how do they go? Are you full steam ahead as soon as you sit down to as soon as you stop when you've turned off all your social medias? Does the energy kind of ebb and flow and you do kind of find yourself having to pull back into it?
Yeah, it definitely, I need a run up to it. I don't find it all that easy to just immediately drop back into my writing, which is probably why I go back over what I've written before, even though that means it's sort of a longer process than just cracking straight on. But I do feel like I need to build back into the mood of what I was writing before. So yeah, I'm not one to just sort of be able to crack on, but I don't really put too much pressure on myself in that respect. And I do find it useful to go over and sort of finesse what I've written the day before, because it's sort of like redrafting as I'm going as well.
How do you know what you are sitting down to write every day?
I don't really. I kind of just lead off from what I've written before. I used to plan my sort of writing out a lot more, and I think that stemmed from, it used to be my job, because I worked as a fiction packager for 8 years, where we sort of wrote briefs for writers and then commissioned writers and sold the whole package to publishers. So it was my job to plan stories chapter by chapter, and certainly for my first novel I approached it that way as well. So I tried to plot out what I do in each chapter, but I soon kind of abandoned that method because it just felt a bit too rigid and a bit kind of unnecessary. I think I just mainly now start off with the idea of what, you know, like an opening scene. And then with, because I write romantic fiction, there's already kind of a built-in arc there. At least for my stories, I kind of know they're going to end up together. So it's sort of how to progress from the time that the characters meet to the moment when they'll sort of head off into the sunset, or they're happy for now, and thinking about their conflicts and things. But I don't now tend to sort of rigidly plot what I'm going to actually do in the story.
I want to talk about all of that. I want to really get into plotting in just a sec. I've just got a few more questions. I think lastly on the day, you've got your music as well. Is there anything else that you need that really helps you out when you are writing? If things are going a bit slowly, if the words are struggling to come out, can you rely on like a cup of coffee at a certain time, maybe a glass of wine in the evening at a certain time, that just going to help things out?
Unfortunately not. I don't have like a magic elixir really that helps me too much. I don't really even, maybe I do have like a cup of tea or anything or something like that, but I don't tend to sort of get up and go and fix myself something. It really is just kind of the music and the stories. I might refer back to sort of my notes. I tend to write quite a lot of notes before I start writing a project. So I might go back over those, or I kind of write myself out of issues, in the sense that I will go back to my notebook and write down thoughts or ideas or points that I want to try and achieve with the characters, and then go back into the writing, the actual laptop. I do think I'm sort of more aware of what fundamentally makes a compelling story, but that's not to say that I can always sort of easily execute it. But I think it sort of affects the way that I think it mainly affects the way I approach drafting the book. So once I've written a first draft, I think my editorial brain kicks in then. It does feel like, quite oddly, it feels like a separate process being a writer versus being an editor, although no doubt one influences the other. But it kind of, it's still hard. It's still surprisingly hard to think with an editor's brain when I'm actually writing a story. I don't really like feeling restricted or thinking I need to write this in a particular way in order to satisfy a particular aspect of storytelling, or to so I don't really think about audience or anything like that, not to a great extent, when I'm actually writing the book.
And also, I can't imagine there are many other jobs out there when people do their day job and will also wake up early and go to bed later to do another version of that day job. What is it about storytelling that draws you in to such an extent that you're doing it for, what, like 18 hours a day, 5 days a week?
I mean, it's just a compulsion. I think one thing I would say is that I'm not one of those fortunate writers who could rely on only writing to make an income. So editing books, I also absolutely love editing, and I love guiding and helping other writers. So the two things are genuine passions of mine. So it does feel like work. That's kind of a lie. You know, when people say it doesn't even feel like work, it kind of does. But it's not something that I would do if I didn't genuinely love doing it and feel a compulsion to do it. I mean, yeah, I don't think I would be getting up at 5:30 if it was something that I wasn't genuinely passionate about. So yeah, I think it's just, I'm propelled along by the love for it. Yeah, for the love for storytelling.
Where does that love come from, do you think?
I'm not sure. I've always loved writing. I've always loved books since I was a young kid. And, you know, if there was ever the opportunity to do like a creative response or whatever, instead of answering questions in another way in an exam or for an essay, that was always my go-to. So I think it's just the way I express myself. So that's just always something I've done. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to pursue it as my career.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We're back with more from Sarita Domingo in just a sec. Now, this episode of Writer's Routine is sponsored by Caroline Lawrence's brilliant new book, How to Write a Great Story. Now, she supported the show over on our Patreon page. If you would like your book to sponsor an episode of the show, that's what you need to do. You need to get to patreon.com and pledge to help us out for a month. You can get loads for doing that. You get our thanks, you get little bits of merch, and you can get the big sponsorship as well. Now, it doesn't need to be a lot. Just a little bit every month, it really means the world. It helps us to carry on doing this regularly, helps us to continue bringing you chats with as many of the best writers as we can. If you can help us out, if you've learned anything along the way that has helped the way you tell your stories, please send whatever you can. Just a little bit a month. It really goes a long way. You can do that over at patreon.com/writersroutine. Let's get back to it then with more from Sarita Domingo chatting about her new novel and audiobook from Audible, If I Don't Have You. It's all about the whirlwind romance between Ren and Kayla. Now, in this half, we chat about why she really isn't interested in the tropes of genre. We also talk about what the publishing industry needs to do for fairer representation across all races, all cultures and colours. And we pick things up talking about the very first idea that she had for the story. What was that light bulb moment?
It's quite a strange light bulb, but I had a dream about Eminem, the rapper. Not that kind of dream, but I'm not even like a massive fan of his or anything like that. But I had a very vivid dream that I was a journalist and that I was sent to interview him, but somehow missed the official interview. And so I went to his apartment and interviewed him. And that just kind of struck me as an interesting idea. And then I saw a clip of the Emmys, so the television awards in America, and saw a director called Cary Joji Fukunaga, who's actually directing the new Bond film. But he's incredibly good looking. And I was like, wait, who's that? And the two ideas sort of melded together in my mind. And I decided that I wanted an opening scene where a journalist was sent to interview someone she was very attracted to. And they had a lot of chemistry. And then I wanted to kind of explore the idea of them throwing caution to the wind and having a one-night stand that ends up becoming more. So yeah, the catalyst was a weird dream I had about Eminem, which was in no way romantic, but for some reason that was the initial kernel of the idea.
I have to say very quickly, Cary Joji Fukunaga, he's a dashing chap, a very, very dashing chap.
He is extremely attractive, yes.
well, listen, so you've got this idea, you've had this dream about Eminem. What comes next? So this is quite a, maybe an annoying question for an author to answer, but you've kind of talked us slightly through your process earlier on, which is you have the idea, you start writing it. So you've got this initial idea and you want to investigate the idea of a romance between two people who are kind of thrown together. How do you unpack that further before you do start typing away at your laptop?
I always start with just writing down ideas, and I tend to start a new notebook and just start sort of writing down the very basic ideas. So I'll write things like throwing caution to the wind. I'll just write that down as a phrase, and sort of write down some ideas about the characters, what their sort of backgrounds or situations might be, particularly what their conflicts might be. That's quite important for sort of romantic stories. You don't want it to just be that they meet and then they fall in love and then it's fine. So kind of thinking a bit about what the obstacles might be for those characters. And particularly for If I Don't Have You, I wanted it to be in three parts. So I did write down very basic ideas of what would happen in the first, second and third parts of the novel. Excuse me, the novel. So I knew I wanted the first part to just be the night that they are sort of thrown together and have this whirlwind affair. And then I knew that by the end of that, they would conclude that there's too much between them to just call it a one night stand, and that they decide to try and carry things on long distance, kind of, because Kayla, the female character, she's a Black British woman living in New York, and she has to go back to London. And Ren, who is, he's a film director, that's where the Cary Fukunaga bit came in. He's off to film, to shoot a film in New Zealand. So they'll be miles and miles apart. And so I knew that I wanted the second part to be how they navigate the long distance. And initially I actually wrote that as being completely epistolary. So it was kind of their emails and letters and text messages, only, so no other type of narration. And then the third part, I knew I wanted to have a couple of years have passed, things hadn't worked out as they had planned, but then they meet again. So I knew I had those, that was kind of the structure I was working to, and I wrote all that kind of thing down in a notebook, and I knew what the opening scene would be with Kayla interviewing Ren. So I kind of worked from there. I tend to just write, you know, a good 10 pages of notes in a notebook and then begin, start writing.
Why was setting it in three parts quite important to you? Why are you not writing this in a standard way? Why are you charting their relationship through just three snapshots in their timeline? How did that come to you?
I'm not really sure. I really like stories like, say, Before Sunrise that take place over one night. It's a film. But I didn't want to, I knew I wanted to explore the idea of what happens after love at first sight. And I didn't want it to just be a linear thing. I thought that would be boring and also wouldn't sort of allow you to jump into each, you know, the key aspects of navigating that kind of relationship. So I thought snapshots, as you put it, was kind of a good way of approaching these key moments in their relationship rather than just trying to tell it all the way through. But I did change I also just was thinking about three act structure in terms of films. I kind of wanted it to be quite cinematic, but in book form. So, yeah.
What I'm getting my head around at this point is earlier on, you mentioned that you don't really know too much about the story before you sit down. You kind of stopped trying to do that. But if you've clearly defined these three moments that you are going to focus on, surely when you are writing that first bit, you do know some of what's happening in Act 2 and then Act 3.
I mean, kind of, but really not much beyond knowing that, you know, I kind of just knew they would be apart in the second act, and that in the third act they'd be somehow thrown back together and it would be maybe 2 or 3 years later. But that was really the only information that I went into the story with. So I did kind of just let it unfurl as I wrote. But certainly with the second part, I had initially written that all as just them exchanging letters and emails. But when I went back over it, I kind of thought that that didn't work. So I just used the letters and emails that I had and incorporated some of them into that second bit. One of them ended up as a prologue, and one of them is in the third part as well. But it was quite useful to use their letters as a way to plot, I guess, to kind of think about what they would be doing and how they would express themselves. And the whole book is written in first person, and it alternates in chapters between Kayla and Ren's perspectives. So I used that structure quite loosely at first, but it did allow me to have some sense of what I was planning to do with the story. It ended up feeling a bit too limited, because obviously when you're writing a letter to somebody, even if it's somebody you're emotionally connected to, it's not the same as being able to access that character's thoughts in first person, you know, in and of themselves, and then the parts that they're leaving out or what they're doing in their day to day that they don't perhaps tell the other person about. And that became particularly important because the second act is kind of, there's a lot about what Kayla and Ren are both doing that they're not telling the other person. And that's part of why things end up falling apart for them. So Kayla, we know from the very beginning of the book that Kayla is planning a green card wedding to one of her best friends who she kind of runs a web magazine with in New York. So she's planning to marry this guy who she's not in love with just to get a green card. But she sort of decides not to tell Ren that quite key information. So I ended up feeling like it didn't quite work to only have their letters, because it left too much for the reader to infer. Whereas if when I went back and sort of rewrote that part more traditionally, it allowed me to explain more about what she was feeling and also what Ren was up to as well.
And on that voice and the perspective that you're telling the story from, if you're alternating the chapters from Kayla to Ren, how easy was it to switch between those two quite distinctive voices simply without muddying the waters, I guess? Maybe I'm glamorising it too much, but was that a challenge at all?
It actually was quite easy, only because they're so different and their voices were so different to me in my head. Because Kayla, she's a Black British woman, so she kind of she's from London. I guess it was a bit closer to my own voice in a way, and so I found it quite easy to access her. And I kind of had aspects of her character. I knew she was quite self-confident. I knew she was quite forthright, so I found it quite easy to access her voice. And then again with Ren, he's a New Yorker, he's an African-American man with Brazilian heritage, so I again kind of really had a sense of what his voice was, what his cadence would be. So writing both of them in first person, it felt like they were already quite different, and it was quite easy to switch between their two voices whereas I was alternating in each chapter. And then, of course, they're speaking to one another. So I knew how to sort of get their voice in there through speech as well.
And this is quite a simplistic question, but you surround yourself with words almost every hour of the day, the written word. How much did you think about the next word that was coming? were you too concerned about making it the right word? Or is it just a case of getting it down there? It doesn't matter what it is. We can fix it later.
Probably a bit of both. I mean, I don't overanalyze every single sentence as I'm actually writing it. But certainly when I go back over, even if I'm just going over, you know, from the night before, or if I, when I'm actually, you know, doing, going over the draft, the full draft, then that's more about finessing word choice. And my editorial brain probably kicks in a lot more at that point. But as I'm writing, no, I don't necessarily think too much, you know, I don't fixate too much on what's the perfect word to use as I'm going along.
You mentioned earlier with you writing romance novels that there is already an arc over how this story is going to go, that we're reading, we want them to get together in the end. How important is it for you as a writer to maybe give the reader something that they're not expecting from a romance story?
I mean, that really is quite important to me. I guess what I'd term what I write is more romantic fiction than necessarily sort of genre romance. I think there are slightly different expectations from readers of romance if they're very interested in genre. You know, there are tropes that perhaps you might expect from romance. So, you know, like convenient marriage or pretend to be my boyfriend, you know, like a fake boyfriend or fake girlfriend type situation, which isn't the starting point for me. I think I'm more interested in just the idea of falling in love. So while there is a structure, I don't think it's kind of, I'm less interested in tropes, although they do obviously inevitably sneak in. And I don't, obviously there's absolutely nothing wrong with tropes, but it's just a slightly different approach for me. But I do love romance. And I do love the idea of experiencing two characters falling in love, both in terms of reading it and writing it.
Lastly, can I ask you about Black Lives Matter? What are you, write, you edit, you've been in the publishing industry for a while. What does, and we're seeing quite rightly this cultural wave of change where people for a long time have realised that they need to do better, particularly people in power, to give fair representation. How is the publishing industry, how is the publishing industry with this? I mean, when the Booker was shared earlier this year, and, you know, Bernardine Evaristo, it was shared, and that was a big deal. Maybe a bigger deal than it really needed to be. What does the publishing industry still need to do for fair representation?
Wow, I mean, it's interesting because, for example, if I don't have you, I decided to go with Jacaranda Books to publish that. So, and obviously they've done this deal with Audible as well. But Jacaranda Books is a Black-owned independent publishing company. And it was very important for me to sort of have the opportunity to work with a publisher like them with a book that features Black characters. And they're actually publishing 20 Black British authors this year in 2020. And I think what really needs to happen is for the publishing industry as a whole to realize that there are so many Black authors out there, talented Black authors, who deserve as much opportunity and focus as their white counterparts. And it's the same within the industry itself in terms of, you know, the talent, publishing talent. We need more people of all, you know, different ethnicities and different sexual orientations, all that kind of, you know, we need to reflect society more accurately, both on the page and sort of behind the scenes. So I think some work is being done towards that, but, you know, it's incremental and it does sort of feel like waves come around, you know, every couple of years where the publishing industry realizes that they need to do better. But I think what we need is more consistency in that, and more opportunity, more recognition across the board.
Is that the job of a writer? I'm trying to word this in a way. It's just quite a tough question to word. Is it the job of a writer to fairly represent characters in their story that where perhaps it isn't necessary is the wrong word, but where it would naturally be the case? If you kind of get what I mean?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. I mean, so writing your own experience or writing maybe characters that aren't of your own background.
Yeah, and then putting in putting in characters of different sexuality and different culture, just because that's kind of what society is asking for at that moment.
No, I mean, I would never expect that a writer should do that, certainly not tokenistically. I think it always needs to serve the story and feel natural to the story. And if you are writing characters that aren't of your own background or experience, you need to be careful. You need to properly research it. You need to question why you feel the need to include those characters and make sure that it genuinely is serving the story and is coming from an authentic place. But I certainly wouldn't. What I wouldn't want is for authors to feel that they should sort of tokenistically include characters just to sort of appease a moment. I think it always needs to just serve the story. But what we do need is just more space for people to tell their own stories.
And that is it for Sarita Domingo on this week's episode. If you enjoyed the chat, if you think you might like to read or listen to If I Don't Have You, her brand new book, you can get yourself a copy. Just use the link that is in the episode notes wherever you're listening, and it's over at writersroutine.com as well. While you're on the website, use the contact form on there, get in touch, let me know what you think, let me know how you've got on with NaNoWriMo, whether you've got even close to the word count for the month. Now, next week, we're chatting to CJ Cook, all about her new novel, The Nesting, which is a twisting, turning, chilling thriller set in the freezing cold fjords. Perfect for winter, I reckon. So that's next week. If you subscribe, the episode will automatically download. Before then, if you want to help us out, you can do that on Patreon. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also follow us on Twitter. We are at WritersPod there. Thank you for listening. I will see you next week with CJ Cook on Writer's Routine. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.